This is a Saturday Night Live Friday speaker meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous held at Westgate West in San Jose, California on July the 7th, 2000. Our speaker is Danny E. of San Jose, California. The original recording of this meeting is kept in the SNL Tape Library. Please observe the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes. Please do not break the anonymity of the speakers or any other AA member at the public level. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Danny. I'm an alcoholic. And I promised Mark I wouldn't read to you for an hour, those of you who know me, but I can't stand up here without my book, so. And I'm glad to see a lot of unfamiliar faces, because too many of you have heard this before, and I feel less like I'm boring you if I don't recognize your faces. Anyway, I guess I have one unusual aspect of my story to start with, which is I know the day that I crossed the line. Not everybody does. That was June 26, 1987. I suffered a massive stroke which destroyed a little more than half my brain. Life became instantly unmanageable. I was in a coma for about 6 weeks, you know, on life support and all those good things. And I was not expected to live, you know, and eventually, when I didn't die, they decided, okay, maybe she's going to live, but she'll never walk, she'll never talk. At best case, I was going to be a vegetable. So, you know. But the point of all this is I woke up from that coma, and within 1 minute, I only had two thoughts. Okay, I didn't think of my children, my family, my husband, what happened to me, how was I going to be, was I okay? No, I'm not okay was my first thought, and a drink would make it better. I had not been a drinker up until that point. You know, a couple glasses of wine with a meal if I went out occasionally. I didn't keep alcohol in the house, but that was my first conscious thought after 6 weeks in a coma. I'm not okay. I need a drink. And I don't know why, but I was absolutely certain that if I could only have a couple drinks, I'd be okay. You know, I'm laying in bed, my arms beside me. I mean, that's pretty typical, right? Okay, but the left side of my body is completely paralyzed. I don't have the right side of my brain, so I don't even know it's my arm. And I'm getting hysterical, and I'm trying to convince the doctors and nurses that somebody's arm is in my bed. I can't feel it. I can't move it, so, you know, I don't know. So they very patiently explained to me that the arm is connected to my shoulder, that it's wearing my wedding ring. And, you know, they try to, okay, fine, I understand the process here. It must be my arm, but sure doesn't feel like it, and I don't want it in my bed. Thank you very much. I was not pleased with the whole experience. You know, I woke up, I had this god-awful headache, and I didn't know what was wrong. My brother asked me some question or other. I tried to answer him, but one side of my face didn't move, so he couldn't understand me. And started yelling and screaming at me that I wasn't funny, to cut it out, or I was going to the hospital right now. I didn't cut it out, and I went to the hospital. You know. The doctors absolutely insisted I was having a cocaine overdose. But I'm also one of those rare members who I'm only an alcoholic. I'm not an addict. I had not used cocaine in a number of years. Because when I got married at age 20, because I was pregnant to my first of five husbands, might as well get that out of the way. You know, I knew good moms didn't use drugs. That just wasn't okay. And even though I had used drugs extensively in high school, not because I liked them better than drinking. I mean, I did, but that wasn't why. It was because I never tried to buy drugs where I was asked for my ID. You know, liquor stores were really fussy about stuff like that. Drugs were just easier. But when it was time to be a mature, responsible adult, I said, okay, no more drugs. That was that. I just didn't use them anymore. And that was, well, my daughter will be 21 in September, so it's been quite a while, you know, since I stopped that. And that was just no big deal. You know, but I figured, you know what, even good moms can drink occasionally. You know, you can't go out and get drunk and all that, but I suspected that even, you know, Mrs. Cleaver and Donna Reed had a glass of wine now and then with dinner. So this all fit in with my, you know, vision of, you know, I was going to be a perfect wife, perfect mother, perfect homemaker, all those things. You know, aren't we all going to be perfect? So I gave up the things I thought would interfere with that perfection, but drinking wasn't one of them. You know, it wasn't a problem at the time, so it wasn't. You know, that was just that. Okay, so now I wake up from this coma and I want to drink. I don't care about anything else. I don't care about going home to my children. I don't care particularly about what's wrong with me. See, the doctors don't understand. The only thing that's really wrong with me is I need a couple drinks. The fact that I can't walk or talk or read, those aren't particularly important to me at the moment. I just want to go home so I can do what I want to do. And I don't know how I knew I needed to drink. At the time, it didn't seem like that big a deal. It's just what I needed to do. It didn't mean anything to me. It's only in hindsight that I realized that was because I was born an alcoholic, which is, you know, no big surprise. My father's an alcoholic. Both my uncles are alcoholics. My grandfathers were alcoholics. You know, there's no male in the last three generations of my family who's not an alcoholic. And so far, they've all died of it. I do still have one living uncle. However, he's currently, you know, his liver's failing. He's, you know, suffering from bleeding varices. We don't expect him to be around much longer, so he'll be the last one. He's the last one left, and apparently he's going to, you know, follow family tradition and die of cirrhosis of the liver. But my family's attitude, or at least my father's, as he professed it, was he'd rather be dead than sober. And he is. He died at 48 years old of, you know, cirrhosis of the liver. And what's really sad about that is he had been sober for a year before that, but he just, you know, he didn't do it with us. He was, well, what we would call dry and hating every minute of it. He didn't have a solution. He only had the problems that alcoholics have. So he couldn't be sober and happy. And I'll tell you right now, undoubtedly, if I wasn't sober and happy, I don't see the point of being sober. I was doing just fine being miserable, you know, before I got sober. If misery was what I wanted out of life, sobriety was not something I needed. So anyway, they let me out of the hospital eventually. I go home and I start drinking. You know, I don't start drinking alcoholically immediately, but I'm drinking as often and as much as I can. And eventually they send me back to Boston for rehabilitation from my stroke so I can learn to walk and talk again. Because they finally decided maybe I will. Because, and this is going to be important later too, I just was not convinced there was anything wrong with me. Alcoholism is not the only disease that comes with denial. You know, I knew I was perfectly fine, you know. So I sat there. You know, they told me I couldn't read, but I refused to believe it, so I just sit there with a book until my hands got so tired they couldn't hold it up anymore, staring at the words, forcing them to make sense. And when they weren't looking, I'd crawl over the railing of my bed and pull myself around to learn to walk again. Because there was nothing wrong with me, right? Now, of course, I did all this on my own with my willpower. You know, God's nowhere in the picture. Now, the fact that my heart had stopped 9 times the night I had the stroke, and that I had the whole near-death experience, you know, the white light and you see yourself on the table, the whole deal, didn't cause me to believe in God. It was all me. You know, I was just amazing. I did all this myself. Thank you very much. If God was involved, it was only because he did it to me. You know, I was pissed off at him. And I didn't realize at the time, but I do now, that, you know what? If you're pissed off at God, you believe in him. If he did it, you know, if you're blaming him, you must believe he's there. I was not happy with that realization either, I'll tell you. No. So I start drinking. Hi, Johnny. And I move to Boston because that's where the best rehabilitation center for strokes in the country is. So I go there and, you know, learn to do all these things again. Most importantly, I learned to ride buses, which is good. I can get to more bars now. I went to bar with my mom every day, but I never drank with her. or any of my family. They don't believe I'm an alcoholic. I've spent hundreds and hundreds of hours in bars with my family while they all drank and I drank soda. So it's no big wonder they just don't believe I'm an alcoholic. As a result of that stroke, I had, you know, in addition to the brain damage, 15 psychiatric disorders and epilepsy. So it was real easy for my family to blame everything on all the other problems. Made it easy for me not to see alcohol as part of it too. You know, when you have bipolar mood disorder, you're psychotic, you have multiple personality disorder, clinical depression, like I say, 15 of them. It's pretty easy not to pinpoint alcohol as your problem. But, you know, over time, that became more and more obvious because what would happen is, of course, my drinking escalated. You know, I had to drink more and more to be okay because life was not getting any better. I mean, why would it? I wasn't doing anything but drinking to ignore my problems. Ignoring your problems is not a good way of solving them. At least it didn't help mine. So I became suicidal as a result of these, you know, my life in general and, you know, the various psychiatric disorders I was suffering from. I am one of those who suffers from grave emotional and mental disorders. Though I have to say that now I now take medications only for, I don't take any psychiatric medications. I still have countless medical problems and I do take medications for those. But for the most part, even though I'm disabled and have, you know, I do have difficulties with life, I can do life on a day-to-day basis. And people, you know, if you saw my life, you wouldn't know that, you know, I wasn't a normal person. You know, I clean the house, I do the groceries, take care of my family, you know, do as much service work as I can here at Alcoholics Anonymous. I stay pretty busy and I do a lot of things. Though I am a cottage industry unto myself as far as the medical profession goes, you know, I do spend a lot of time with doctors. Just to give you a clue, the other day I had to mail my medical records to Social Security. So I go to the post office to mail them off, and turns out I can't mail them. I have to ship them as a package. They weigh too much. And that's just for this past year. Okay, so, you know, I didn't give God credit at the time, but I now know that it's my relationship with God that has, you know, cured not only, well, not cured, but has allowed me to, you know, address my alcoholism as well as my other diseases. And I'm sorry, I got to read you just one thing here. Okay. And this comes up in relationship to, you know, all the other problems I have besides alcoholism, because like everybody here, I'm an alcoholic and. I mean, we're all a million things. I'm a mother, I'm a wife, I'm a sister, I'm a daughter, so what? Most of all, I'm an alcoholic. That's what counts when I'm here in this room. Anyway, okay. Like I say, I have, you know, a million and one problems. We all do, but that's okay. This is a way of life. This is not just a solution to drinking. It's that and far more. Okay. So leaving aside the drink question, okay, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. They show how the change came over them. When many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact of their lives. Okay. They present a powerful reason why one should have faith. Like I say, an encounter with, you know, God firsthand, the white light, the being there in the dark, and that wonderful, I mean, it was a wonderful and amazing experience. I wanted nothing more than to be left alone to go into that light. But doctors in emergency rooms, they have this nasty habit. Your heart stops and they insist on starting it up again, time after time after time. I mean, you can beg them to leave you alone. They just won't do it. So I spent from age 29, and by the way, I'll warn you now, if you try to add up the years and the dates, it's not going to work. My memory's just not that good. Okay. So from 29 to probably 32 or so, I drank without, you know, losing control totally. But by the time it was still my primary focus, but I still had, you know, the ability to carry on my life and drink. As best I could carry on my life. The fact that my life was totally unmanageable under the best of circumstances allowed me to ignore the problems the drinking was causing so that I could tell myself that's not the problem. God knows if I admitted it was the problem, then I'd be in real trouble because it wasn't the problem, it was the solution. Alcohol is the only reason I stayed alive for many years. I came here following my 15th suicide attempt that landed me in intensive care. I never thought about killing myself and then said, I'm not going through with it. I always tried. And I generally came, I came pretty close because I ended up in intensive care consistently. You know, I averaged 6 week stays in the psychiatric hospitals. No one let me go in 72 hours. There was no doubt in anybody's mind that I was incompetent, could not deal with life, and that included my own. So finally, I moved back to California because when I went to Boston for rehabilitation, I left my two children with their respective fathers. And, you know, now after 5 or 6 years of drinking, I'm finally starting to realize I probably ought to come back here and take care of my children. Because when I feel suicidal, what I'm doing now is I'll drink because then I'll feel better and I don't have to kill myself. And after all, I'm a mom, I have a children, and I have responsibilities, so, you know, I got to stay alive. So I should drink so that I don't kill myself. I honestly believe that was a good plan. The best thing I could do for my kids was get drunk enough not to kill myself. And that worked for a while, but eventually, I guess it's what people talk about when they say you can't get drunk anymore. I'm sure on a breathalyzer I would have been drunk, but I could not drink enough to be okay anymore. The drinking didn't get rid of the pain. It was still just too unbearable to be me. So I would go out and I was going to drink a little bit till I felt better so I wouldn't kill myself, but now I still feel just as wretched, except I've totally forgotten the responsibility that I'm supposedly hanging on to for my children. So that's out the window. I go ahead and try to kill myself again, you know, and again and again and again. And this goes on for a number of years until I get back here. And one of my children, who was at the time 15, comes to live with me. So all of a sudden, you know, the bizarre behavior and the things I've been doing and telling myself they were just fine, I wasn't hurting anybody. I know you've heard that before. I couldn't maintain that lie anymore. I was too obviously hurting my daughter. Now, that doesn't mean I turned around and did everything right. What happened is I ended up in the hospital again with a recurrence of the paralysis from my stroke because I could not take the medications that would have prevented that from happening because they won't give them to you if you drink because they're blood thinners. And if you fall down and cut yourself, it's very serious, and drunks have a tendency to do those sorts of things. So they told me, okay, your choices are you can take this medication, which will probably save your life, but we won't prescribe it for you unless you tell us that you're going to stop drinking. And, you know, I wasn't even willing to lie about it. I was going to drink, and that was that, and it was none of anybody's business. You know, thank you very much. Leave me alone. I'm going to do what I want to do. This is the only way for me to survive. You know, you just don't get it. And to kind of put in perspective for you the best I can briefly just how miserable my life was, I have to tell you about following, I don't know which suicide attempt, but somewhere around the 13th or 14th, I finally ended up with this doctor who looked at me and kind of just shook his head. And he told me, he said, Danny, killing yourself is not the worst idea you've ever had. Living your life on a daily basis is worse. I don't know how many of you have spent any time with psychiatrists, but they just don't tell you it's okay to kill yourself, that your life is so bad, you're right. Go ahead, kill yourself. That's probably your best option. And you know what? I adored that doctor. He was the only one who got it. You know, nobody else really understood just how wretched it was to be me. At least this guy had a clue that, you know, being me was more than anyone should have to bear. And there's the first change, because today, you know, I'm happy, joyous, and free every day, no matter what. I don't do bad days. I don't have time for them. God, you know, I took the steps, and in step three, I turned my will and my life over to the care of God. And God wants me to be happy, joyous, and free, so that's what I do. I suppose I ought to tell you I got sober at some point, huh? Okay. I don't quite remember how it came about as far as deciding to do it, because I didn't think I was an alcoholic. My doctors told me that I wasn't. It was simply a matter of, you know, if they could get me medicated correctly, that I could drink normally. My drinking was not alcoholism. It was a symptom of my bipolar mood disorder. You might recognize some. Well, no, you won't. They don't use that term, but they talk about manic depressive illness in the big book, which is the same thing, and how common it is among us. Just lost my train of thought there. Anyway, okay, so I'm in the hospital. I got to get sober at some point here. And I eventually get out, obviously, because here I am. That wasn't easy either. You know, the hospital didn't want to release me. They wanted to find a permanent care facility because I was never going to be competent to take care of myself and to live life on life's terms. And I assure you I do that today. What's even more bizarre is a number of women have me for a sponsor. I mean, people, if you know where I came from, the idea that anybody wants my suggestions on how to live their life is totally bizarre. Almost as bizarre as there's someone here who might spend $5 to listen to this again. You are sick. We are sick people. The only thing sicker than that are those of us, and this one is the only thing I didn't do wrong, perhaps, is who come here looking for him or her. Now, looking for him in a bar makes sense to me, okay, but why you go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting looking for, I mean, you guys are losers. You can't even drink successfully. And so, the first time I heard the idea that there were people here doing that, I was just absolutely dumbfounded. I couldn't believe just how sick and messed up you guys were. And I knew that I had to stick around here at least till I got to step 12 because somebody had to help you guys out. So I was going to stay here and do that. So I'm in the hospital, and I don't believe I'm an alcoholic yet, but I know something's got to change, and I am starting to recognize that at least my suicide attempts are now all following drinking. Somehow I had that moment of clarity at least, that, you know, when I drink, it doesn't fix anything anymore. When I drink, I try to kill myself. And I have a 15-year-old daughter at home, so this isn't okay. You know, so. Now, before this moment of clarity, on the final suicide attempt, is what I did is I snuck out of that hospital where I was for the paralysis, convincing everybody I knew that someone else was taking me home, and started walking home from Los Gatos down to Williams Road where I live. I didn't live there then, but I lived within a block of it, so, and stopping at every bar along the way. Because this time I'm going to kill myself and succeed. There are railroad tracks there. Now, the train probably only runs once every 3 days, but I figure, that's okay. I got time, you know? I can get a couple bottles and go sit on the railroad tracks for however long it takes. But I run into a complication. Now, if this isn't alcoholic thinking, I don't know what I'm doing here. I can't kill myself by laying on the railroad tracks because there's too much traffic. I can't cross the street without getting hit by a car. Now, that probably sounds stupider than it really is. See, I don't know how many of you have been seriously suicidal, but the goal is just to be out of pain more than it is to be dead. I don't want to get hit by a car and live, thank you very much. I want something, you know, if it's going to hurt, and I don't want to hurt. So anyway, I keep walking home, stopping at bars, getting more wretched on the way. Finally get there, and by now I'm drunk enough that I forgot I'm supposed to stay alive. So I find a razor blade and a few bottles of pills, and I slit my wrists for the God knows how many times. I should have figured out by now that you got to cut deeper or something, but that hurts too. I'm just not into pain, you know. That's the whole idea behind suicide, is to be out of pain. Apparently it hurt enough for me to make some sort of noise, because my 15-year-old daughter comes in and finds me in the other room on the floor and starts wrestling with me to try to take the pills and the razor blades away. So I finally hit bottom on the floor of my unfurnished apartment that I've just gotten, so my 15-year-old can come live with me and have a better life. We're wrestling on the floor, and my blood's running down her arms. It's time to do something. Even I have finally figured that out. Okay, so I don't remember deciding to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I do remember talking to the woman on the phone and getting directions to a meeting. At that time, it was across the street at El Paseo. Okay, so, and I'm going to come at noontime when my daughter's at school, so I'm being very careful to do this so that it won't interrupt her life. Okay. Someone told me something about that, which is that, Danny, if your children survived your drinking, they'll certainly survive your sobriety. And if you're a mom here and you're worried about, leaving your kids alone to come to meetings and stuff, if you're like me, you left them alone to go drink, so don't sweat it. It's okay. The most important thing you can do for your children, for your family, for yourself, for God, for the world, is to stay sober, work these steps, and pass it on to somebody else. That's the whole deal. One person getting sober is only a minor thing. There's a reason we get sober. Okay. We're talking about taking step 9 here, but okay. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order. That's what I was trying to do when I got sober. I wasn't looking for God. I just wanted my life to get better, okay? But this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose, I didn't know it yet, but our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Okay, so, I'm coming to my first meeting finally, and I am scared to death. One of my disorders is I have panic attacks and anxiety. Well, I don't, but did have anxiety disorder. For me to go out of the house, I had to wear dark glasses, a black hat that came down with a brim that curled down like that so I could see just enough to walk, but you couldn't see me and I couldn't see your faces. And, a headset under that. The idea was to go out insulated completely from people. I was scared to death of everyone. I'd hide in doorways and look down the street till I could make sure I could go 2 or 3 blocks without encountering anybody. And then I'd run that 2 or 3 blocks and hide again. You can't cover a lot of distance or go a lot of places when you can't be seen in daylight. Now, if it's dark and you're going to a bar, that's safe enough. You can come home from bars at 2 o'clock in the morning and walk through areas where there's a murder every night. That never concerned me. But anyway, I get to Saturday Night Live, and I got to walk across the parking lot. And there's all these guys with motorcycles and black leather jackets, and you remember, I'm Donna Reed, remember? I might drink a little too much now and then, but I'm still Donna Reed. I wax the floors, I polish the silver, I'm a stay-at-home mom up until all this happens. So, I'm scared to death to walk across the parking lot, but I'm also absolutely certain you're all watching me, right? So the only thing that would be more horrendous than walking through that door is for you to see how frightened I am when I turn around and walk away. So thankfully you were all watching me intently and I had no choice but to walk through the door. And then the most amazing thing happened. I wish you could all have it this way, but I didn't believe in God. I walked in the door. You were in here. You were smiling. You were laughing. Your eyes were clear and happy. And something just came down over me and enveloped me. Hadn't believed before, but it was God, and I knew it absolutely at that moment, and there's been no doubt in my mind since. And my obsession to drink was removed that day. I haven't had to fight that battle. I do know why I got that lucky. It tells me right in the book. Everything's in the book, by the way. And the reason I didn't have to do more than walk through that door is because that's all I was capable at that stage. And God is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. I could walk through the door and not a thing more, so that's all I had to do. Now, most of you are probably in a little bit better shape than I was 7 years ago when I got here, so you're probably going to have to work a little harder. Sorry about that, but I absolutely guarantee you, if you do what we do and you stay here, life can be wonderful. It can be anything you want. I don't own a home, I don't drive, My younger daughter and I are estranged. I haven't seen her in 6 months. She decided right around Christmas time that she just didn't have time in her life for me anymore. And, you know, kind of basically her attitude is, you know, you didn't have time for me when I was little. I was in Boston busy drinking. Can't argue with her there. You know, well, now I'm busy and I don't have time for you. Okay. So that's kind of difficult for me. But you know what? She's right. I have no right to force myself into her life now that I'm ready to be her mom. You know, she had to do without me when she needed me. I owe the child a living amends. My family is irate. You know, legally I have the right to see her twice a month. And they don't know about making amends or living amends. So their attitude is go to court, force her to visit. You know, my sponsor and I talked about it, and somehow making living amends to somebody by making their life miserable and dragging through court doesn't seem to work. So 6 months ago, you know, I told my daughter, you know, we talked about it, and I talked to her dad and all that, and we agreed that I would not force her or take any legal action. And I told her that, you know, yes, indeed, it was true. I did have the right to do that, but I wouldn't. That I would like to see her, but that was up to her. So I call her twice a week, and I send her a package or a card at least once a month. And last week she called me, and next week I'm finally going to get to see her. So I'm, you know, I've just had the most wonderful day. I just got that news this morning. And I've, you know, prayed and meditated in my garden this morning, and the hummingbirds came out. You know, when I talk to God, you know, sometimes if I don't know how to explain it, I just get so overwhelmed and filled with gratitude and love. I wish you could all have it. I wish I could, you know, just scoop it up and put it in buckets, because there's just more than I know what to do with. If I could sponsor about 30 or 40 more of you than I do, I might have enough people to spread it around with. I am one of those who loves you all. I can't always claim that I like everyone, but I dearly love each and every one of you and would do absolutely anything to help you in your sobriety. And, you know, that's about it. Let's see, I guess. No. Okay. Thank you. Stop early. Stop early.